7, everyone ready? All right, it is now 7 o'clock. We will call to order this meeting of the Village of River Forest Sustainability Commission. Co-Chair Charette,
Yes.
Co-Chair Lennon, Commissioner Haley, Commissioner Cadlec,
Yes.
Commissioner Avalos,
Yes,
Commissioner Hoyt, Commissioner Marty,
Here.
Student Commissioner Steerwalt. We have 5 voting members present. We do have a quorum. Next item of business is public comment. No one in the audience. We've received none prior to this, no one on the Zoom. So we'll move on to adoption of the meeting minutes. So last month's Zoom recording, I typically, these are all recorded on Zoom. I forgot to unmute the community room. I'm just checking right now. It is unmuted this time. So I was going off of my handwritten notes and my memory. So the meeting minutes are a bit shorter than usual. They're typically 3 to 4 pages. I think they're barely 2 pages this time. But yeah, I didn't know if anyone had any additions, corrections, anything else.
I read them. I thought they looked fine.
With that, I would ask for a motion to adopt the meeting minutes.
Mo
So
to
moved.
adopt.
I think Chris beat Ben by half a second there. So can we get a second?
I'll second.
All right. Co-Chair Charette,
Yes.
Commissioner Cadlec,
Yes.
Commissioner Avalos,
Yes.
Commissioner Hoyt,
Yes.
Commissioner Marty.
Yes.
All right. Minutes are adopted. We will move on to commissioner updates. Does anybody have any updates other than the agenda items?
I wanted to talk briefly about this past Saturday. I went to an event that the Village of Franklin Park put on. They did a seminar kind of afternoon with different speakers from local organizations. So they had the Xerxes Society there and did a lot of it was mainly centered around, Franklin Park is both a tree city and a bee city. So they talked a lot about their efforts towards that. So I know bee city is something that we've kind of touched on in this commission. So it was cool to hear from another village and kind of what they're doing for that. They do have a dedicated like bee committee that they use for that, but obviously I think we would just be kind of our own bee committee already that we have here. But a lot of the stuff that they're doing I think is adjacent to our efforts, and so I think with the work that we're doing for birds and pollinators already, I think some of these things will kind of fall in line. But yeah, I just wanted to mention like a cool event from a local village, and like it was nice to see something like that. A lot of there's people from all different Chicagoland communities over there and everything, and nice to hear about some of their efforts and work that they're doing towards those certifications that they have, because they mentioned that they're one of maybe like 3 places, villages, towns in Illinois that has both tree city and bee city. So that was cool to see and maybe think about for River Forest. The other thing that I wanted to mention briefly is that there's a few community events coming up at Triton College. So I would, gonna plug those real quick. We have a like a campus tree walk coming up October 22nd at 11 a.m. at the Triton Botanical Gardens. And the head of the horticulture department he's got a wealth of knowledge about the trees that we have on campus and identification and so on. So he's gonna take the group on a walking tour. But this is a public event, kind of open to anybody who's
Is
interested.
that a Wednesday morning?
Yes. Yeah. So hoping for nice weather, just be a good chance to explore the Triton community and the various tree species that we have there. Another event coming up that I'll mention is also tree related. We're doing our annual fall tree planting event. Will be on November 5th at noon. And This year we'll be planting a Schumard's oak, or a swamp red oak tree. So that will also be in the botanical garden as well, but it's we kind of do a little bit of a, you know, short ceremony and like tree dedication. It's part of Trident's commitment as a tree campus. So it's a nice opportunity to get people together to see the botanical garden and then also, you know, plant a new tree and kind of affirm some of our efforts on campus to care for trees and everything. So
what's the date on that?
November 5th. Yeah. And yeah, both of those events are open to anybody, you know, who's interested. We want them to be outside of Trident, you know, larger community events. So I thought I'd mention them here.
Ben, would you mind sending me an email either with those events or if you've got a link of just all of Trident sustainability events, I could just permanently link that onto the village's sustainability page as well.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I'll do that. Thank you.
And put it in the calendar?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
And Ben, I don't know, maybe fudge the numbers, but I'm fascinated. I think we should dedicate the tree to Jane Goodall.
That would be fun, yeah.
But but I'll keep it short because I got to get up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. And if anyone else wants to, I'm going to Springfield tomorrow with Illinois Environmental Council. There's still room on a bus, but they leave at 5:45. But if you can't make it, I still think it's very important if anyone, well, no one, I guess I'm speaking to you guys, but the public transit system is facing, like, most of their money got taken away from the federal government, CTA, PACE, and they've been slushing around money. So I'm going there to advocate for more money for transit, as well as there's also a styrofoam phase out in there, which the Capitol cafeteria still uses styrofoam. I can't believe. But if anyone wants to call their senators and reps, feel free to. It's a quick session, only 4 days. And then they're back at the end of October to finish it up. It was you. Also, if anyone wants to speak, we're in the early stages, but Triton Environmental Club in collaboration with just all of Triton is planning, when they come back from veto session, Jen Wallings, the executive director of Illinois Environmental Council, is coming to speak and answer questions from just anyone in the community or students. Is open to the public. And if anyone would like to come from the village or the commission and watch or speak, we can work that out if anyone wants to speak.
Do you have a date for that?
No. Oh, yes. November 20th at 1 p.m. in the cafeteria.
Can you send that? Oh, is that open to everybody? Can we put it on the calendar?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we could. And I don't know if Ben's going to put it on the sustainability calendar.
Yeah, definitely. So that can, I'll definitely send that over to you as well.
That might be a good weekly notice. Like, here's stuff going on at Triton, and put it all together and send it out.
That sounds like a great plan.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I should just let everybody know that the plant sale went off. Native plant sale last Saturday, I think it was. Two Saturdays ago, three, I forget.
Recently.
What's that?
The first Saturday of October, whenever
the weekend before last. We beat last year's total by about $300 and change. So $1,256 of revenue, in part thanks to a bulk purchase by one ambitious gardener. But the end result was pretty good. So pretty happy about that. And I want to thank all the people that showed up. I know Manolo and Ben moved plants and did some heavy lifting. So that was very helpful.
Ben dirtied up his brand new car.
Okay. And also, I was down on the Kankakee River doing some hiking a few weeks ago, and I was very pleased to find evidence of river otters in that stream. And I know there's been some press about the return of river otters in Illinois, and especially up here in the Chicago area. My friend and I identified some scat on a ledge along the Kankakee. So I've never encountered that animal in this state. So very happy that things are getting clean enough for river otters to return.
Is that at Kankakee State Park? Or
yeah,
please.
I've never been there.
I grew up in Wilmington. So.
Oh,
oh, you grew up there?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Kankakee?
Wilmington, the other end of Kankakee State Park, basically.
Right. So, if you know the islands,
yep.
There's one called Langham. One of the big ones. If
further, you're upstream, further south. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nature preserve, actually. So that's where we were.
How do you get there?
It's about an hour south on 55. And
how do you get to the island?
You walk across the river, and
the river is only about
you get
3 or 4 feet.
You get wet.
this time of year, it was in extremely low, being a drought kind of, it was low. So we waded across. Sometimes you need a boat, chest waders.
Okay.
It can be an adventure, but it was this time it was manageable.
Yep. I can go next. So I have a couple things to report. Let's see. We'll talk about this later on, but I went to a presentation by Ridwell, which is trying to come up with clever solutions for a lot of the plastics that we cannot recycle, the flimsy stuff, but we'll talk about later on. I also went to the Forest Preserves, hosted a lawn equipment expo that included a lot of electric equipment. So I went to that. The invitation was extended to the park district, and I was very happy that there was feedback that they had gone as well. I'm not sure if the village sent anybody, but.
I know this time of year they were trying to get all the trees planted before leaf collection starts. Yeah. So it's been, I know, and busy for our.
Yeah. And Public Works is already, they already have a relationship and are purchasing electric equipment, but I gave some information back. So that was interesting. And I talked to the rep there for the electric equipment that the Forest Preserve uses, just to see there's some special incentive to see if there was any way that we could. It essentially amounts to a minimum amount of purchase on an order, get some 20%, which the municipalities automatically get if they spend $100, which is not too hard. But anyway, so TBD, if we can work something out for that to assist some of the lawn care people next summer when they have to adhere to the beginning parts of our ordinance. I also went to, there's an organization called Faith in Place, which is environmental. I would not be able to explain exactly what it was, but it's faith-based environmental, and they had a summit, which was at Unity Temple. And Robin Wall Kimmerer, who is the author of Waiting Sweetgrass, has a new book called A Service Berry. And it was a very, very compelling. I mean, basically what she's saying is what is necessary at this point to save what she describes as the seventh extinction is much more than, not using straws and recycling. It takes a complete change of mindset to realize that this, the earth is what feeds us and clothes us and, provides for us. And if we don't change our, if we don't change from thinking of it as an it to a, almost like a person, a living thing, then we're doomed. But and then there were a lot of vendors there too, so that was good. And the last thing I just wanted to plug was so I don't know if anybody had a chance to see this, but there's a director who conducted a series of interviews with people in their 90s, and the premise of this series is it's called Famous Last Words. And his promise to them is that it will not be published until they pass away. And it's a complete secret, even who all of these people are. But the first one was released 2 weeks ago, and it was, in fact, Jane Goodall. And it's absolutely fascinating because he's alone in a room with her. They've set it up so there's no crew. There's no film operators. It's just stationary cameras and a rotating camera. It's about an hour long, and about five minutes before the end of it, he reads, a very moving thank you to her for everything she's contributed. And then he says, "I'm going to leave now, and these words nobody will hear until you pass away." And her words are essentially, motivational, you know, sort of a plea not to give up. And it's very moving, and I would suggest that. So thanks for Jane Goodall.
Anyone else? Should we move on to our next item? All right. So in setting the agenda last week, David, Susan mentioned you guys may have a Bird City update, so I put a dedicated place on the agenda for that. I don't have any materials. You'll notice my packet was kind of thin this week, so I'm really going to defer to you guys for these next couple of discussion items on the agenda.
Yeah, I was traveling, so I didn't print anything out. I don't have it in front of me. But if you would like an update on Bird City,
I thought maybe you could talk about your meeting with Adam Kessler and what resulted from that, or Kessel. I forgot what his last name is.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So the only update I had is that I reached out to Adam Kessel. I think a lot of folks know as, I don't know what his title is, but he's the
Executive Director of Trailside Museum Nature Center.
Yeah, so he kind of runs the show over at Trailside, and the naturalists all work for him, and he's very plugged into, I think, the Forest Preserves on a system-wide basis. So I approached him with our project to attain Bird City designation for River Forest. And he's seems very supportive. And after a lot of discussion that I can share with you later, if you're interested, basically what resulted was that he asked for a letter of, he thought we should pursue a memorandum of agreement or a letter of intent, both very official, bureaucratic sounding words for a document kind of testifying to the Forest Preserve's commitment to helping out with this project. So I drew up a draft and gave it to Adam. He asked me to write up a draft because over there at the Forest Preserves, I don't think they like to at headquarters on Harlem, they maybe just don't like to write so much. So I actually wrote what I thought they should say. And then I'm waiting for them to edit that and get it back to us. And I was hoping to have it for today, but I don't. So I don't know. I can send it over as soon as I get it, maybe for the next meeting or to circulate before then or what for people to review.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. Whenever you get it back, I can send it to everyone. And then we can just keep this on the agenda for next meeting. And
okay. So
month you have an update, we'll keep talking about it.
Okay.
And then anything, again, you need from me in terms of staff support, let me know.
Okay, super. So, we're kind of waiting on that. And
Before you move on, I just want to add one thing to it. So so I think the reason for him writing up this memorandum of agreement is that allows him to use the resources of the Forest Preserves to pursue this project. It's just a way of formalizing for them. But in our conversation about this before, what I found was really exciting was, so he is part of an educational program, and so he's thinking about how they can incorporate this in. So it's not just that they're going to work with us, but they're going to incorporate this into their educational programs, which is really exciting because we can draw on their expertise, but also be amplifying the work that we're doing.
Right. So a little more detail. Thank you, Susan. A little more detail on that. Adam's background is as an instructor. He's a teacher. I think he worked in Chicago Public Schools. And then he's done some other work in different capacities. But he's an educator, basically. And Trailside, of course, is a museum. And a lot of what they do there is community outreach, trying to basically engage the public, give them nature experiences. And so the way he kind of framed what we were looking for regarding nighthawks as a bird of focal species was to take the first step of reaching out to community educational institutions. And he apparently already has some connections with Triton and thinks he might be able to reach out to Concordia to do what he calls trainings, which is where the Forest Preserve, the staff at Trailside volunteer to collaborate with teachers at Trinity or elsewhere to support their curricula in appropriate ways. So if they're doing a unit on, I don't even know what, but some kind of biology or ecological coursework that might be supplemented by a bird walk on campus, they could support that. And then his vision, very kind of incremental and step by step, which I think is really smart, is to build up connections that way that could possibly lead to eventually doing what we were talking about, a sort of grand research study that might provide empirical basis for conservation recommendations to these institutions. But that's how he sort of envisions kind of build, beginning to reach out and build relationships. And of course, this letter of agreement is the first kind of protocol for
to formalize it. And I think the collaboration with Trinity is important because they have a new rooftop, which is which you can watch through a window, but is not accessible. So if there was a way you could encourage them to go there, that would be really exciting for the students because they would be protected, but also observable.
They have an observatory? They have like a window?
Well,
that you,
onto this? It's an, you know, sort of maybe describe it more like a patio, but it's not accessible. And so then it has windows on both sides. So it would be
That's very cool.
But I don't know how you, I mean, you'll have to tell me how you get the Nighthawks to go there.
I meant to follow up with you, Susan, because I know you've said there's a lot of interest there, but haven't heard from them.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about this offline. Okay. But the other thing I wanted to mention, this is not exactly related other than that it has to do with Adam Kessel, which was he reached out to me. I just forwarded this to you, Seth. I'm so sorry because
I just saw the email. I will send it along.
Yeah. What's exciting about this, so I think I reported at the last meeting or the previous one that I had been an event in the Forest Preserve and was shocked to find that the food truck had styrofoam. So I went up and, you know, sort of very politely told them. But then I talked to somebody. Unfortunately, the programmer, who was in fact Adam's boss, was there, and we talked about it. And so Adam was very excited. He was unaware of this ordinance. And because both the Forest Preserve's headquarters and Trailside and then the area north of Chicago, since that all falls within River Forest, they often think of themselves as their own entity. But in terms of our ordinance, they are within the border. But, I mean, they weren't upset about this. They were happy about it. But anyways, Adam has kind of taken this and run with it, and they're trying to use our ordinance to get this imposed into all of the forest preserves, even the areas that lie outside of River Forest. So I think that's kind of exciting, and Seth will be forwarding that, and hopefully that'll be happening soon. And then I said, well, as long as you're at it, you may as well have composting. And then I said they could use the composting that we, at least in River Forest, they could use the compost bins that we have for block parties.
Could I ask a clarifying question real quick? The agreement is between who and who? Who? I know you drafted it, David, but what
would it be? Well, that may change, but as I worded it, and it may change, I worded it as between the Sustainability Commission of the Village of River Forest and the Forest Preserve District of Cook County.
Okay,
they may alter that to be the Village of River Forest.
I think it'd be better to say the Village because we just represent, like, we're not really an entity. We just represent. So I think it'd be better when you redo it to say Village of River Forest, and then I think the trustees would have to approve it.
Yeah, that would need to then go to the board for approval.
Okay. So
we aren't really an entity that has like the power to enter into memorandums with other entities. So,
okay.
So
fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. So that'll all get edited. And, once I find out who the entities are, we'll note it duly.
Yeah. But again, that's just so that they can allocate the resources, and, you know, they have to be very accountable. We recently had a referendum and received increased funding, so they have to be very accountable as to how they're using that.
As far as the Bird City project, then, so that's the work, the only thing I have to report, but I think, you know, if anybody else is interested in attacking any other aspects of this, they can feel free to jump in and we can talk because I'm kind of focused on one part of it. We have all winter to kind of knock, check the boxes, but help out, please.
Happy to help.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll talk.
We're good.
Okay.
So maybe he could meet with us next. Oh,
we would need to be.
We can't
just yeah, two of you meeting.
Yeah, sorry, yes. Can't be.
But you guys have to meet.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
David, Chris, tomorrow I will send you guys. I don't know if you have each other's emails, so I'll send them so you guys can connect directly.
Okay.
I think I do. Yeah. I think I got a list.
I don't. So.
Got it.
But, yeah. But maybe you should.
Yeah.
That's Jeannie, do you have a public comment or are you just listening? Just listening. Okay. Good. This is Jeannie Calabrese. Welcome to our meeting. Very big supporter of all things sustainable, native, master gardener, and slow cooker.
So that's it for Bird City. Yeah.
Just a quick comment about the efforts that you were mentioning. So I forget if I had mentioned in here before, but shortly after last month's meeting, I was at on Triton's campus, you know, in the evening hours, and I saw what I'm very confident was a nighthawk. So I think I'd mentioned it to you, but I wanted to, you know, just put it out there for the whole group as well. But I'm looking to work with the biology department to hopefully incorporate some work into potentially monitoring nighthawk or other bird populations on campus through in the spring semester. So I'll share more as I have it. But yeah, hopeful that students can be involved in a project related to some bird monitoring on Triton's campus in the spring.
That sounds great. Yeah. So you saw one on September, early September.
Yes. Yeah. And I also did like check, you know, you had mentioned that they prefer, you know, the gravel rooftops, and we don't have any gravel rooftops, but we do have some, you know, white rooftops. So I didn't know if that would also be a preferred, you know, habitat. But yeah, it was in between the like the two biggest buildings that we have on campus where I saw it, and haven't had any luck, you know, observing any since then. But yeah, it was exciting, and I thought I'd mention it. And I know there is interest from the biology department in doing some monitoring. We've in the past, students helped out with a project to monitor bird casualties that we've had on campus, you know, because we have a lot of big windows and sky walkways, you know, that have been a problem for bird mortality. So I think it would be, yeah, an exciting project to kind of document some of the bird species that we see common on campus, including the nighthawk.
I think that's great. If you guys want to set up a sort of a species specific monitoring program that will help inform what we're doing, that'd be really helpful. And then we can kind of isolate where they may be nesting, if at all, in your areas, like whether on your grounds, on the roof, or perhaps in some of those grasslands behind Triton. So that would be really helpful. Would it make any sense for us to be in communication with them, or you want to be the liaison for that?
Yeah, I can be the liaison for Triton, but I'll definitely talk directly, you know, with you if with updates that I have.
Okay, fantastic. You know, on that subject, in my update, I forgot to mention, in terms of this past Saturday, of course, was World Migratory Bird Day, which was announced in our bulletin, and just the week before. So migration has peaked and should start declining. Just the week before, I was on Lake Street taking my daughter to an appointment at about 8:45 or 9 o'clock, and I found an injured hermit thrush on the sidewalk in front of the health club there. FFC, you may know it. So after some investigation, it was clear that it was injured, and the club has tall windows, you know, it's kind of, you just look at the situation, you kind of instantly surmise what's going on. And so there's an organization in Chicago called the Bird Collision Monitors. If you ever find an injured bird that seems to have experienced a window strike, you can call them, and they will, if they're able, come and take the bird, transport them to a bird rehabilitation center down in, I think it's Naperville, Will County Forest Preserve runs a facility down there. But I did gather up the thrush and they sent someone over who I happened to know, and put the bird in a paper bag. And she opened her trunk and told me there were 100 other birds, and that was one morning from downtown Chicago. So this is a big deal. And here was one bird from suburban Oak Park, but 50% of bird strikes come from low-rise structures such as homes or commercial buildings. But anything you can do over there at Triton Bend, I think, would be very, very.
Make that 101, because I saw one by the Public Works garage. There are windows in between the two garage doors at Public Works, and it had fallen down. And I was kind of concerned because there's a park there, and I thought some little kid will be coming by soon. So somebody did come out from Public Works and take it, but I didn't know about this organization. So,
all right, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, Chris, when we meet one of the subheadings in the Bird City action points is collisions with class.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something we could, I don't think it's a huge problem here, but we could definitely do a little bit. So.
Well, and I think since we've identified this as a problem, I mean, I've put in a request that Public Works has their lights out at night, but if that's not possible, there's some easy, there's a filament that you can put on top of the window that identifies, you know, has little dots. So maybe at the very least we can do that if they don't think they'll be able to, you know, just as a protocol, they should turn it off, but they might be working late some night and they're unable to. So we can look into purchasing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, at the very least, we should be taking care of the village buildings.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, that may be, and Chris, you and I can talk about this, but, like, just an inventory of, I don't even know, like, where all the buildings are and what the window situations are like, but we'd get an inventory and see.
Yeah, what to do about it.
Yeah. So thank you, Susan.
In terms of village buildings, it's really just three. It's here, our Public Works garage, and our water pumping station. So,
and these, I don't think these lights are ever left on, are they?
The ones here?
Yeah.
I
work across the street, and
the fire department and police department are,
they don't have big windows like this.
No. Police might facing. Oh. Oh no, I guess they don't really.
If they do, I mean, we can take a look. Yeah. But if they do, then there's this filament. It just has. It's sort of like a little grid, and it's. I don't even think it's expensive, but that's not.
I believe
we can look into.
All of the, or at least most of the exterior lighting is specifically has the
down facing.
Yeah. The extra sort of shields on top.
Yeah, the best practice currently is, again, a kind of a film that's applied that is what they call fritted, or has a very small pattern, less than an inch or two in diameter. So it's explicitly not what you may know of as the kind of bird that Roosevelt has them on its gymnasium windows, just a decal of a bird. Those are ineffective. So. Yeah, but again, we can talk more about that. I think the gym at Roosevelt would be a big target, but they're
then I would say, like, the biggest one for the outdoor lighting would be to get the park district to turn off those lights when nobody's on the field. Keystone Park.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah, I was at least for sure during peak migration. Yeah. Okay, a lot to talk about.
And then just as the discussions with the Trailside Museum and the Park District progress, keep me up to date. And then anything we need to get ready to prepare to bring to the board of that. And then I know I've just been scribbling down notes, mentioned potentially partnering with the Forest Preserve was looking to partner with Trinity for some potential.
Educational support, like that's how he was kind of framing our the initial bridge to Triton, potentially Concordia, potentially Dominican. They already have a program to offer support of curricula, and we could introduce bird walks as a part of that and introduce nighthawks as a species of interest in that context, and then begin to
And I know one of the action items is a public event. If there's any way to sort of incorporate that and to sort of open up these walks to the public, could be a potential. I don't want to say kill two birds with one stone. That seems
Oh my gosh.
How about observe? Observe two births. Yes.
Dark humor. I guess dark humor is allowed, you know.
Couldn't resist the bad pun, sorry.
I mean, thank you for reminding me of that action point. But yeah, as it progresses, we'll certainly try to economize our action points. Yeah.
Anyone else on this topic? All right. Native plants. I know, David, you had sent me, I've got a folder full of your pictures. I can pull those up as needed and share them on the screen. I know you had asked me to look into some things. I have been had a busy couple weeks, but I've started bookmarking. I found there seems to be scattered throughout various folders, information from things the sustainability had previously done. I know there was the Parkway Pollinator Project. I believe that was 2021, 2020.
I couldn't say that, but I know there were 55 gardens.
There were some other small, I think.
I think what would be useful, and it's certainly not a urgent item, you know, so that's, you know, don't worry about it. But like, I was just curious what properties belong to the village that could be
that was one of the other one. There were a couple of small parcels that were part of one of the initial contracts with the previous contractor who had was supposed to maintain the Chicago Avenue bioswales, which as a quick aside, the new contractor was out there in September. They've been completely sort of redone. They're much more capable to sort of take in stormwater, and I think everything has been sort of replanted. Mm-hmm.
I passed by some today. They were just like bursting with asters, and they look really good. But before, we're sort of in the weeds here. I just wonder, David, if you could sort of pull back the lens and say what it is you're trying to do, you know, what your ideal is, and then we can identify the exact locations for it.
Oh, yeah. So I think one of the things I had proposed as an incoming commissioner was to get the village doing more native planting on its own property and to encourage more native landscaping on private property. But in terms
and that's also the first item under the bird habitat.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure it would knock off a few boxes for Bee City at designation as well. These things all kind of reinforce each other. So, yes, and I have a grand vision, grandiose perhaps, of taking the elevated sort of looks like a woodland culture burial mound, effigy mound at the pump station.
But is in fact the sister for water system.
The underground reservoirs.
Underground reservoirs. 15 inches of soil on top of it.
Landing site for unidentified flying objects. And I would like to take this symbolic site and turn it into a native prairie. And I think it would be one way to get a big area full of native plants. And that's, you know, I see it as the equivalent structurally as a rooftop garden. You know, Trinity's got one. They're downtown. If we can put rooftop gardens on buildings that are 30 stories tall, we should be able to put a rooftop or a garden on top of a cistern that has 16 inches of soil. So that's the big vision. But also what I was curious about, and I had asked Seth about, was just if we could get a map, you know, that just had all the little easement, you know, whatever, all the little patches that the village is responsible for, so that if it turns out we can't tackle the cistern all at once or ever, we could do bits here and there.
And Beth, do you have a picture of the effigy?
So you had sent me, I think there were five pictures from the plant sale, a couple of which were of Manolo.
Well, I want to have,
but then these were the,
when we get to that, but to start with the effigy mound, I met with Commissioner Charette, and who's very active in the community garden there, and we walked the premises. So,
in this photo, it's to the left, so you can see the pump house in the rear, and along this, well, not along this iron fence, but just beyond that iron fence, somebody has started their own independent native garden on the other side of their fence. And then
is that this one?
No.
This
one.
Right there. Yeah. And they have a designation for it as a monarch way station.
Yeah.
Which is lovely and fine.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of surface area there, both on top of the cistern, the raised mound, and then around it. And Susan and I were just talking about, well, it's used for sledding in the winter. So perhaps, you know, doesn't need to be the whole thing. Or maybe it could be a part of it. Part of it's in shade, part of it's in sun. So, you know, it would be a big project with different pieces. And then around the front of that pump house also, there's some real estate that could be used, and then on the side too. So I think it would be a tremendous statement. And I, if River Forest could do that.
I just want to interject here because we've had a long conversation about it. So the reason that David feels like this is the ideal is because this is meant to be a sort of a teaching spot. And so it's, the idea is for it to be well seen. So we could, you know, drop it on the back side of the slope, but that takes away from the, you know, highlighting it. That's why it's the ideal. If the parameters of the depth of the soil and the fact that this is used as a sledding hill do not rule it out.
Right. And you know, I know there's a sledding hill by the Metro Tracks in Keystone Park. I don't know exactly who that belongs to.
That's
Park District.
Park District. I don't exactly know where the property lines are there with between them and the Union Pacific, but that is Park District. Yeah.
Okay, so they're doing something very interesting with that if you've taken a look at it. You know, and that's kind of what I envision with this. And I really don't see too much conflict between a wintertime sledding hill and that kind of use, simply because you know, prairie plants are made to get trampled seasonally. It's just, you know, as long as I think it were designed appropriately, you could have multiple uses. So do we have any more pictures?
Wait, before you move on, I just want to say, because it pertains to this picture. So one thing, if it was decided that this was a spot, one thing that would have to be done is it would have to be protected in some way, because on the other side of that grate is an aggressive neighbor who sends her landscaping crew onto public land and raises, you can see it, she's done it out in front of her fence, which is not the most defensive, but she also goes, can you go to the one with the wooden fence that you showed before? That must have been before she cut, but she goes all up along the wooden fence, which has nothing to do with the property. And she seems to think that when she moved in, since it was an empty field, that is what she's entitled to. So there would have to be some protection, because I could see her just sending them up there and saying, you know, I don't want to look at, you know, she has a long list of justifications, none of which are valid. But anyway, just to mention that.
Yeah, I think this is part of the kind of long-term project that is entailed here. I know with management of the prairie at Silver Creek and Thatcher Woods, there's illegal cutting of some, you know, rare prairie plants that we find, you know, people must object to them for one reason, or they come in, they cut them.
I think high fines will reduce that incidence.
You know, signage, fencing, fines, hardscaping in certain cases, just to kind of educate. The other thing I want to mention before I stop talking is that I think it would be interesting. I'd be perfectly willing to try to get some outside grant funding for some of this, because we will need seeds. There are a whole set of organizations that would be willing to provide some funding for a portion.
Maybe West Cook Wild Ones.
West Cook Wild Ones. They're different. There's a group called Missouri Prairie Foundation down in Missouri, and they have grants for especially community organizations, so schools, public entities.
I think as a public entity, it might be harder to get those, but we can certainly try.
I previously mentioned the Parkway Pollinator project that the Sustainability Commission underdone. There is a grant program, Open Lands and ComEd have a grant program that opens in January.
Oh, true.
And I believe it is up to $10,000 with a $5,000 local match.
Can you repeat that one more time?
The grant part,
the open lands,
open lands and ComEd. It's
so. Are you saying open lands works with ComEd?
Okay. Open lands work with ComEd. So and, ComEd, I think, provides sort of the money and gets the PR, and then open lands is the one who administers the grant, takes the applications.
Yeah, we did get one. And can you just repeat one more time the funding?
I believe it is up to $10,000 with a $5,000 local match, if I recall correctly.
So they give 10 and we put in 5.
Yeah, I believe that's what it is. I think it used to be 1-1, 10-10, 5-5, something like that. And I believe they recently revised that.
Do you know what the sort of the parameters of the program are?
We can look it up. That's on my, that'll be on my action items.
I would need to pull it up, but I believe it opens
that's
up
awesome.
In January. And so
I'm remembering that. Yeah, I forgot. I actually had to do the grant filing for that. So I still remember.
Okay, well, I will.
And I believe the deadline for that is March, so that would be...
which, January or March?
January is when it opens up. March is when the application deadline is, and then I think they try to award them. I could be mixing it up with other grants, but it could be May or it could be July. I could have it wrong.
That would be awesome. That would be really good.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I was thinking of, I mean, in addition to like local prairie nonprofit sort of land trust organizations, you know, for seed, there are things like, you know, Pheasants Forever and
what forever?
Pheasants Forever.
Pheasants.
The hunters are big into prairie restoration.
Hunters? Like killing the pheasants? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that go against our bird city?
Huh? Well, there's no hunting here, but I'm just saying they're a resource that is very, very much involved in conservation.
Okay.
And down near the Kankakee River, pheasants are farmed and then released into the prairies for the hunting season.
Yeah, but along the way you get like, you know, free seed. You can get free seeds. So yeah. Anyway, that's a wonderful resource. Thank you, Seth.
And just one more thing on that. So in our pre-meeting, Seth brought up, I originally, like in my mind, I associate with a park district, but there is a patch of land. It's south of the tracks. South of the depot on the other side of the tracks, which is public land. When I say public land, village land, I think that was planted before I was on the commission. I don't know if you got the history on that, but that is, and there was at one point the idea that that would continue. So this would be south of the tracks. It has a nice southern exposure. It's fairly protected.
Right up against J.R. Woods. Is that where?
No, you're on Hawthorne now. So you know where the depot is.
Yes.
You walk out of the depot, you go south, you go under the viaduct, and just you take a left, and then right there, there's a patch of native plants. So there was an idea at one point that would continue. So that, you know, theoretically could go from Thatcher to Lathrop on the south side of the tracks with a nice southern exposure.
Yeah, I was gonna say that goes all the way down.
Yeah, right. And we've got someone who lives right there and can keep his eyes on the prize.
Watch it like a knife.
Like a knife. Maybe we could start with yours. And I believe Mary Masala, who was one of the original commissioners, she had drawn up some plans. I don't know if Seth ran across those.
So yeah, this was
it's a photo of it?
Yes. Yeah, so among the things David asked was potential spots.
Looks better.
What I'd been starting to say earlier is the initial group who had been charged with maintaining the Chicago Avenue bioswales, there were two other small pockets, I believe, that one of which was this along Hawthorne. I believe this is just here's right in front of the public.
So what you were just showing was it was between Thatcher, and you're looking towards Gale.
So east?
You're looking east. And are those stairs? No, those aren't stairs, are they? Those are
remnants of what were stairs a long time ago, the whole.
Right. So those stairs would be like going up to the track. And if you go a little bit further, there's the entry. But this looks terrible. If you look, maybe it's just because of the season, but it actually is a lot better.
No, this is in a folder called Native Plant Photos Poor.
Oh, okay. Well, what does it say? Native Plants Poor?
Yeah, let me.
Never mind.
These were examples of areas or poor maintenance was areas they had wanted to highlight to try and address the
I would say they look better. But can you go back to the butterfly garden, because that is another one. It has a butterfly on the, it was the second one you showed right before this.
Let me
It has a mural of a butterfly.
Seth, what do you call that kind of area? Is that a parkway or what?
I guess it's technically a parkway. Yeah, I don't know if there's... let me share this.
Seth, that whole stretch all the way down to Lathrop could be done, right? I mean, that they're just half-dead apple trees along
it, yeah,
there.
There's a...
Oh,
yeah.
Here it is.
And the village has to come mow it.
Yeah, it's typically...
maybe once a month?
Yeah, typically when we have a seasonal public works staffer, they'll typically be the one. I know previously they had contracted that out with some of the maintenance, but it wasn't being done fairly well, so realized they could save money doing it in-house. But yeah, here is another...
Yeah, it may as well be native plants instead of...
Mm-hmm. And you know, the I would just plug in here. The maintenance and cost would be way lower once it was established, so... So this one, okay, so now you're looking at, if anybody has seen the butterfly, now we're on the north side of the tracks. To the right, where you can't see, is the building of the forest of the park district in Keystone Park. And this was planted as a butterfly garden. There's a butterfly. And then there's a little plaque there for one of the commissioners who was one of the founders of the sustainability. This one, I think you can leave in your poorly maintained file because it has almost no maintenance. But it does have quite a bit. Right now you can't see it because this is an old photo, but it has quite a bit of milkweed, which our students unfortunately attacked because we are doing we're extending this. That's our mural from Little Bits where I work. And then we're extending that down, which would be a beautiful place to extend the garden because we've got a mural that's going to get a lot of attention. So why not plant something in front? But, and also I would just point out this perspective makes it seem like it's very thin. It actually isn't that thin. It's about maybe 5 feet.
That's great. Yeah. So we could add that to our list of possible sites. And I guess I'm going to take a look at this open lands grant and kind of see what it is that might be most interesting to them. And then we could decide kind of what to perhaps make our first, you know, objectives.
Yeah. And I can send that link over to you and then we'll.
Okay.
I know we're still, you know, quarter of the year out, but plan to have that be a agenda item for our January meeting. So then that application can get sort of fully fleshed out and prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. So wonderful. Wonderful. And so work has already been done on this in the past.
Yeah. And I believe Mary Masala has either plans or ideas because she had been thinking about extending it and then had several grandchildren and other things that she cares for. But she had put some thought and potentially she would work with you on the planning phase. And I don't know if she still does, but there was a time when she had a Midwest ground covering wholesale account.
I don't think she does anymore. Yeah, I remember talking to her because I also talked to her about this and she said she still has those plans. So yeah, Mary Masala would be a good contact. She's my old neighbor. That's how I know.
We used to live there? Forest?
Yeah, in Forest. Oh. I used to live across.
Okay, so it sounds like we have two kind of target sites that we can continue to evaluate.
Actually, three, because you have the two. You have the one south of the... You have one south of the tracks, one north of the tracks.
Okay.
Yeah, those are two separate ones.
So three, and then the pump station, and then we have at least one very large grant and a number of others that we could start lining up to potentially assist with the work that will be required, certainly at the pump house, if that's we decide to do anything mm-hmm. to restore that.
And another possibility, since you're on good terms with Adam, would be Gar Woods, because they look like they're trying to do something different on the... So now we're talking about the northwest corner of Washington and Thatcher. And there's sort of a big field there, and there's not much going on other than trash.
So your suggestion that...
Well, it would have to be a collaboration because it's their land.
Yeah. I had given no thought to that because they have all sorts of plans going.
Well,
I don't know what the status of that is.
I'm just saying you can inquire. What So in my dealings with, I work with Adam in my day job. We run camps together, and so we've had long conversations about this. And the main focus of Trailside is in the woods surrounding it. They just don't have the manpower to do things in others. So it's conceivable that, that they would, not only would they do something like that, like maybe replicating what they did next to the pavilion, that we could partner with them in that. And they might even be able to provide the funding for it. And, you know, even the you know, the labor.
Okay. That's another possible. Yeah. Thank you. That's an, because that has that collaborative element, which is great. So yeah, I guess that's all I have, unless you want to, pull up those photos of the plant sale.
Yeah, I can pull those up really quick. Give me one second here. I've got,
just so folks know, there's a, we're talking a lot about restoration of habitat, and that requires plants, and plants come from seeds, and there is a nationwide shortage of appropriate native seeds in all regions. And so propagation is a big deal. It is for all of us, but here we go. And so that's our attempt to propagate locally certain native species. That's what went on into the sale on the day of. And there you go. And I would say 90% of it, 85% of it was purchased. And those are the volunteers from Roosevelt, another community connection that we've had going for 2 years now with their environmental club. And our ally and advocate at Roosevelt, Mr. Cadillac of seventh grade science, is absolutely foundational to keeping this going, and also connections with the forest preserve. So, yeah. And of course, there's our hero of the day.
Yeah, I almost had to leave when I found out you were coming. I was like, oh my God, too many commissioners. I got to go. But I just had another thought while you're doing this, which is, you were talking about seed collection. Is there another level of this which we could do, which would be, just be a seed dispersal? So I know you go to tremendous trouble to grow these, but could we do like a seed collection and put them in envelopes and then, you know, whatever the appropriate time of the year, give them out and have?
Well, I'll tell you one thing Mr. Kessel over at Trailside told me is that it, when it comes to it and we are planting, I mean, in addition to these various sources that we can reach out to, he has a network himself, or the Thatcher has a network, Thatcher Woods, of seed collectors, as he described, the master gardeners who sort of maintain inventories of native species. And I think he said we could have bags and bags upon request within days. So
I also wonder if that's something we could give out to residents. Like we, like, you know, at the plant sale, in addition to giving plants, we could have little packets and say, you know, you can take three or something. And
we could certainly do that. But seed, like I said, seeds are at a premium. I tend to hoard them myself for my own purposes. But, and then in terms of collecting them, I think we'd want to make sure that, you know, our sources are people who kind of know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if it was a forest preserve, so you made reference to the master gardeners, that's out of the UIC extension, and they often collaborate with the forest preserve. I see them at lots of events there.
Great.
All right. So next item, communications and staff reports. First item here, I know we had talked about it a couple of months ago, and this had initially come from board discussion, is really just some sort of informational piece to help residents distinguish from the various programs. I believe this started in the, I could be mistaken, but the August board meeting. I had a pretty wordy solar energy guide. I know at one point Jamie had volunteered. She was unable to make it this month again. But I had tried to shorten up my own, work I had done to show the difference between rooftop solar, community solar, and then, although it's not strictly solar, the green electric aggregation program, because it is also administered by the same group that does the, community solar program through the village. really to just sort of bullet point the differences of what these programs are, how they differ from each other, and sort of the benefits of each of them. So I included a printed web page, I believe, in the thing. When I printed it, it came out kind of blurry and small, but hopefully you were all able to read it. This is how it looks on the Village webpage. I really just had three columns with bullet points. Still may need some work, but wanted to update this. I can send this around to everyone tomorrow in case there's any updates before we sort of turn this webpage live and then begin to promote it through the newsletter and social media.
I'd be happy to take a look at it when you send it around.
Yeah. Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you. Moving on to the next item. So quarterly EV charging report. I need to stop replacing the numbers and then actually just continue to add the numbers in different things to show how the electric vehicle and hybrid vehicle registrations increase. So I think I'm going to reformat this for our next quarterly report just so we can see the changes over time in that. This is...
is this the data collected by the state?
Yeah, this is the data collected by the state. The electric vehicle charging station permits, that's typically a small number. Generally, these are people installing level 2 chargers in their garages. Anyone with a level 1 charger, they would just get a basic sort of outlet permit, or they may have an existing outlet that will work for it. So these are the sort of more heavy-duty chargers that are going in there. I did include the typical session and unique driver metrics and then all the various charts. The one thing I did want to highlight, I did include a few extra charts this month. And oh yeah, I can probably pull this up on the screen for everyone to see. Give me 1 minute here. The board had approved the new fee from the commission that the commission had recommended. And that went into effect on September 15th. Let me share my screen here. So I did do a few more reports using that data and how that changes. So this is the quarterly session charging session histogram. Again, prior to the fee being implemented, it was 2 hours free and then $10 an hour at a prorated rate, but it would top out at $30, which is about 5 hours. There would still be these people who would leave their car parked for a long amount of time, but not many. Really encouraged most people to use that free 2 hours and then move on. This second histogram is just from September 15th on. So still a lot of people, even with the change in fee where they're paying 25 cents a kilowatt hour, right from the start, are still charging for about 2 hours. They are looking to get about 40 to 50 miles of charge and then be on their way. Obviously some people did remain plugged in longer and they were paying more for that.
But you said you did notice a change in usage.
Yes. So that is the next two. So this is the number of sessions, on any given day in September. The most was September 12th with 14 sessions in a given day, but you can see significantly less typically, you know, 3 to 7 sessions per day, with the exception of September 17th following the change in the fee. And then unique drivers, also dipped a little bit, not as much of a dip, but still, you can sort of draw that line at September 15th when the new fee went into place and see it's higher earlier in the month and lower. Still likely going to be revenue positive. This really just indicates that people saw of all the various charges around, oh, hey, I can get it free here for a little bit and then took advantage.
Is the village tracking the revenue that's coming in through this?
Yes, I our finance staff. It goes directly to them, but I can dig up those numbers somewhere. Yeah.
And my casual observation, because I work across the street and walk by all the time, is that, you know, previously it seemed like it was never empty or available, and now it's often they'll either be no cars or one car. So, but I don't see that as a terrible thing. It's
and you know, currently this is the only publicly available charging station in the village. That will soon be changing if I can just sort of transition from this to the next sort of sub bullet point of project updates. So the charging stations at the Thatcher, the lot just west of Thatcher, should be going in the next few days. They will not be electrified yet. We're still waiting on ComEd for that. So you'll see five brand new charging stations there covered in plastic bags to sort of indicate that they are closed and to protect them from the elements for the time being. And then construction at the Franklin Avenue lot, just one block east of here, will start, I believe, was it either this Thursday or next Monday? I'd been given a couple different dates, but that should be fully completed by the second week of September. And we're expecting that to be electrified shortly thereafter as well. We had given at the same time frame for these two projects. North Avenue is taking a little bit longer. There are utility right-of-ways, easements through the CVS property, things like that that needed to be addressed, but that should be early next year. So that one is still moving along.
So by the end of the year, how many do we think will be operational?
By the end of this year, there will be, including the one here at Village Hall, there will be 6 dual port level 2 chargers, so 12 total level 2 charging ports, and then 4 direct current fast chargers, all located at the Franklin lot. And curious, but especially with the fast chargers, those will be the only ones really in the immediate area. I think there's a couple in Melrose Park, and there's a couple along Roosevelt Road and Oak Park, but there's none really in between in terms of fast charging stations.
In the parking, because the nearest ones to us are in the parking garage in Oak Park.
Yeah, and those are all level 2s.
Okay, well, it'll be real interesting to see how popular.
Just a question. The fast charger, what technically is that?
There's like a specific threshold of, I don't know if it's the watts or amps or kilowatts, but they level 2s can typically take 6 hours or so to charge a vehicle. The direct current fast chargers use, obviously, switch it to direct current, and most vehicles can be 80% charged in about 20 to 30 minutes.
You said 80?
80.
So it's like a Tesla supercharger.
Yes.
It's the equivalent of that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. A Tesla supercharger is one a brand of
a fast charger.
Fast charger. Okay. Yep. Okay.
But we don't have any Teslas.
No. We use ChargePoint, which is sort of the Pepsi to Tesla's Cokes, if in terms of charging station.
I'm just curious, are the charging ports compatible, or is there?
Yeah, so
inverter, isn't there?
Yes, and the fast chargers will have sort of the two separate plugs for the two types of ports. Mm-hmm. And okay. I know they're all it's transitioning all to be on the one Tesla style port. I don't know what the exact acronym is, but so they do have both types, yeah.
So Tesla and other non-Tesla port cars.
Correct.
Charge there.
Okay. Yes.
So David, you'll have to test it out for us once it's installed.
I'll let you know.
In terms of other projects, so the village board unanimously passed last night a project to install solar panels on the roof of the public works garage. The total project will cost about $159,000. We are getting it in before the federal credits and rebates expire. So I think technically we have to have it 5% complete by next July 4th. We're likely to be nearly entirely complete by that point, if not done. After all the various state, federal, and ComEd rebates, it should come out to about $16,000 for the village.
Unbelievable.
So we had two really competitive bids. One of them basically really, really wanted to work with the village. Windfree Solar was the winning bid.
Windfree, yes.
They have done the Oak Park Park District's solar panel projects. I know they're doing the ones covering the parking lot near their recreation center. So they've got a lot of good local references.
Chris, he's worked with a lot of people, so he must trust them if he picked them. Yeah,
they're great. And they also, the founder still lives in Oak Park too, I think. But I met up with them at this solar event a while back.
People from Windfree, I believe, is a River Forest resident.
River Forest in Oak Park, okay. Yeah.
And they were a sponsor of the Faith in Place Summit I spoke about earlier and gave me lots of nice swag, including sunglasses.
So those are the big ones. And then we are still working on design for converting all of the Village Hall parking lot here to be, some of it will be concrete, but with permeable pavers. We're partnering with MWRD with it, and there is a sort of cap in how much they would contribute is their partnership, and they like to call it a partnership, not a grant, for various reasons. But with the stormwater retention, we can actually, we think we'll be able to split it into two separate projects, and then we're going to next year have the front parking lot and then sort of the police drive around the north and west converted to permeable pavers, and then the staff parking and visitor parking lot here to the south. We're going to apply and break off as a separate project and hopefully leverage more partnership funding out of continuing to work with MWRD on that. So the design of that is underway, and then the project should be next summer to fall.
That's good news.
And then last,
I could probably write up something on that because I picked up this and it's got a lot, you know, so it could be like a little intro about why the village is doing this and why this is important in the runoff and how that ends up.
We've probably done similar things. I know MWRD did partner with us on some of the green alleys. I believe one of the very first ones, I believe Gale Avenue, was done in partnership with MWRD.
Which is mine.
And then three of the final alleys. So I know the curved alley going through Park by Park Drive, the block immediately south of that, and then one of the blocks, I believe either one or two blocks east of there. There were three alleys that were, the last three completed in 2022 that were also part of the MWRD partnership program.
That's wonderful. Those are huge. Again, I think at some point we have to highlight just everything that the, you know, maybe like an end of the year summary, because it's very, very impressive. Good job.
And then quickly moving on to communications, I had actually been making a couple notes here as the people were throwing out ideas. So Migratory Bird Day ran last week. David sent me something on Leave the Leaves that's going to run this Friday and Saturday.
Does that include stocks? Good.
The Pumpkin Smash event for District 90 is the day after Halloween, so we're putting that information out a week early just to give everyone plenty of notice. I did have a resident request for recycling information that I had sort of added to the queue a few months ago that I'm just going to plug in for the very end of the month. We're going to have, for the monthly newsletter, plug in the sustainability scorecard, and I've really copied, hopefully they can put the entire scorecard with the links into the newsletter is my hope. That's how I had submitted it at least. So hopefully that'll get just a lot of clicks and engagement just straight from that. I just sort of started moving things around. Following that, we had noted promoting Triton sustainability events, the guide solar energy. If not, I can just continue to plug community solar. Our annual partnership with Elgin Recycling for Holiday Lights Recycling will be starting the week of Thanksgiving. That will run through mid-January. And part of that is we promote that three times through the Village newsletter. So there will be once the kickoff week, once right before Christmas, and then once sort of as a last call the week before it ends in January. And then there were a few things I had plugged in for December. There was a great Sustainable Holidays article that I believe our former student commissioner had written up a few years ago that has just been easy to sort of plug in every year, as well as the annual Holiday Greens composting, just to let residents know when that is taking place in January.
What is the Recycle Coach item?
So Recycle Coach, that is another thing, and that sort of transitions to the recycling portion at the end of our agenda. Yeah, that works. So Recycle Coach is
are you done with this?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, perfect transition there. Recycle Coach is a program, and it's a recycling education program through a partnership with the IEPA. It's free to all Illinois communities.
Can we just say what that is? What were those letters that you just said?
The Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Okay. So it's the state level environmental agency. That is the Springfield based, not federally based, separate entity. But Recycle Coach, I had initially learned about this probably early this year through the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. It signed up for it. It took a little while to get everything onboarded with sort of Cook County communities and working. They had been working with Cook County to get all of the sort of disposal information correct on their end before it opened up. So that recently opened up. I have sent information along to add the Recycle Coach. It's a tool or a widget, and I was trying to find examples and I couldn't, but it would be like an interactive tool that we're working to add to the Village website where residents can look up how to dispose of certain items, and it could direct them to whether we have an event like our electronic waste or household hazardous waste collection programs, or it's just part of our, you know, curbside composting or regular recycling program, or if it can direct them to, say, the Cook County Center for Hard to Recycle Materials or any of these other drop-off locations or specialty collection locations for more unique materials and how to recycle or safely dispose of them. So that's the biggest component to it, but it would also have sort of interactive ways for people to see what their collection schedule is, if they're being delayed today by any holidays. There's ways that they can submit complaints through the Recycle Coach tool that I would then get the email for. So it's supposed to be this all-encompassing thing. I don't know if it's all needed, but it's set up in a way so it still all sort of funnels through the appropriate people, and it has a lot of educational tools included in it, which I think is the most helpful thing, because I get a lot of calls from residents simply asking what's their best way to dispose of item X, item Y. So once we get that up and running on the website, I had tried to add it myself. However, our website is coded in HTML and the widget was coded in JavaScript, so I temporarily wiped out our entire recycling page on the Village website for a day before our website administrator was able to get it restored. And so it's with them and they are getting it set up. But that was my plan, is hopefully that will be done middle of next month, and then we can do a full communications launch in December. The other thing I would need to add at some point in here is the EcoShip program. you guys may recall, we had done the Earth Month drive. They are doing another packaging good drive for the holiday time.
But let's just stop for the people who aren't commissioned. So what happened was there was a, so this was a volunteer from the, from a resident from River Forest. There was actually a box that was upstairs in Village Hall. And I don't know how many times she emptied it, but she filled up a small conference room. She was so embarrassed when I told her you had let us in there. She said, oh, it was so disorganized. I said, no, I was just so impressed by the quantity. But she collected quite a bit. There was a tennis shoe collection, and she is a member of the River Forest Tennis Club. So she got a tremendous amount of sneakers by advertising there. And it was really huge, and it's wonderful. Her name is Christy Hunt, and it's wonderful that she's willing to do this again. And we're going to try to get a partner for her so it won't be so onerous this time.
Yeah, so this, they collect packaging goods along with other materials and then distribute them to small businesses in the Chicagoland region for reuse. So doesn't even go through the recycling process. It's just immediate reuse of these things. So very sustainable practice. There was an incredibly high level of participation among village residents during April. And so with sort of increased packaging and ordering that everyone does around the holidays, I anticipate there will be equal, if not larger, interest during this time frame. So Christy Hunt, I'm meeting with her in a couple weeks to sort of begin the process for this. I think the deadline to apply isn't until the beginning of December, but we're going to try and hit the ground running so it's up and available, and residents can take advantage of that. So hopefully during the month of December and then early January, people can drop off their old Christmas lights and holiday lights at a box outside along Central Avenue, and then come upstairs and drop off all their old packaging materials in a box just inside the lobby.
If we have a way to do it, it would be awesome to get like a sort of poundage of what we're recycling from these different programs. The numbers always seem to impress people.
Yeah, I will look, because I don't know if Elgin gives us any information on that.
My other comment was, when Recycle Coach is up and maybe before we advertise it, I think it would be nice to ask all of the commissioners to beta test it. You know, just go in and see if you have any difficulties, because then we can get out the wrinkles before we go to a wider audience, and, you know, so people don't end up frustrated by that.
Yeah, that would be great. And then I think the only other item of recycling, Susan, you had one item you wanted to touch base on.
I did. So I attended Ridwell. It's a company. They actually have a website. I can send a link to Seth so he can send it out to everybody. They started in Seattle, sort of a beautiful origin story. There was a father who had young children, and he was just overwhelmed by the amount of waste they have. So they started this project, and so they would pick an item every weekend. So they'd say, like, this Saturday we're going to collect corks, and they would gather together all their corks, and he'd find a place that you can take these, and he tried to get the best, instead of just like sort of recycling and sending out there, he'd try to get somebody that's using corks to do something. And then he started leveraging. He said, well, if I'm going to be driving around to all these places, why don't I ask my neighbors too? So he created a Facebook page and he started collecting, and this became bigger and bigger, and so eventually it turned into a business and they employed people. And so it's called Ridwell. And I just want to say from the start, what impressed me most about this is their focus on a circular economy. If anybody needs explaining, I will explain, but does everybody know what a circular, you do need explanation, yes? So a circular economy is when you take everything that you produce and you find a use for it. So instead of just saying like, oh, great, I'm going to recycle this and throw it in the recycling, we don't know that recycling has an end product. So what they're doing is they are partnering with people on the other end. So they don't just chuck this into a, sort of an anonymous recycling. It's like they find a partner for everything they have. And so in other parts of the country, actually, my brother lives in California, and he has a subscription to this. In other parts of the country, it's a pickup. So you have a box on your, just like everything else, you have a box. They come by, it might be every 2 weeks, and you put in hard to recycle things like, like all those snack bags and the bags that we get produce in and all this other stuff. In this part of the country, until they have 2,000 people, this will be a mail-in. And so this was my little intro packet. It cost $30. I was happy to donate it. I'm a tough sell and I don't usually buy things, but I thought if somebody presented this idea to me that they're trying to create a circular economy and they only wanted $30 out of me, I'd say take 100. But anyway, so for $30, you get this little description. I can pass this around or you can come take a look at it to see what they recycle. Then you get these handy dandy bags. They have a very interesting smell, not a bad one, but very interesting. And I am going to take it as a challenge. Like, I hope this will last for like at least 3 months. The packet was 30. If you go onto their system, there's lots of ways to be a subscriber. If you just want to like bag, like a one-off bag, these are $12. There's one, this is for multi-layer plastic. This is very, very hard to recycle because there are many different things. And I think with this, they're having, their partner is making, these construction blocks that are then being used for decking. So it's just going directly into being used. And there's another one for like sort of the more filmy stuff. And then there's more like, there's more of a subscription so you can have them sent to you like on a regular basis. But since I'm a single person household, I thought, no, not that. And I already have, so again, I'm just one person, but I already have a very low amount of waste. I produce like one bag of landfill per month, but I thought, you know, even somebody who's doing good can do better. And so now I'm taking this as a challenge. So as I put things in here, I'm like, if I'm going to take responsibility and pay for like every piece of plastic, I'm going to think even harder about it. So for example, there's, maybe some of you already know about this, but there's a toilet paper towel company called Who Gives a Crap. Has anybody heard of that or used it? No. Do you use it? No. Okay. So I thought like, you know, I think about like, if I go to Costco, I'm going to have to recycle that big bag that goes around it. There's another plastic bag. I thought, you know, that's going to fill up my whole bag. So I reached out and I got my first shipment from Who Gives a Crap. And so what they do is they ship it in a box, which is recyclable. It's covered with paper, which to my eyes is so pretty that I'm going to use it for wrapping paper. And also I find it very funny that people will get presents that will say, who gives a crap? But maybe not everybody would. So anyway, I guess my initial ask is I would just, you know, I'll circulate the thing. I'd ask you to all take a look at it, you know, consider it for yourself. Hopefully you'll be swayed. But then also, you know, think about how can we amplify this? As with everything else with recycling, I really appreciated the little intro by the woman who presented this. And what she said was that a lot of the challenges we have right now in recycling is that when I was growing up, we had bins. So there was like, you put your paper here, you put your aluminum here, you put your glass here. And it was far easier to recycle this stuff. It had many more uses. And also to add to it, in New England, we have a deposit tax, as they do in California and in Washington. We had a deposit bag on aluminum. So if you didn't recycle your aluminum cans, some little kid's job was running around collecting 100 cans so they could get $5 and buy candy. So you did not see one aluminum can on the road. And, you know, hopefully that would one day be true here. But yeah, so I was really heartened by this. And I guess the other thing that really impressed me was that I have been working at this for a long time and this would never have occurred to me. I wouldn't have the technical skills to do it. But I thought, you know, what I do have is I have the funds. So I can support, you know, people are doing this and I'm happy to support somebody who's doing this in such a thorough and well thought out way. And, you know, I would say I have a pretty big watch out for people who are greenwashing. And, you know, I think these guys are the real deal and really, you know, trying to up our numbers, which I just want to say this too, because I don't think it can be said enough. And I hope that all of you will repeat it. But somebody brought up, you know, oh, I heard less than 10% is actually recycled. The reason for that is because 80% of people don't recycle. So it's not that if we all make the effort and we get things and we put the appropriate things in, the recycling rate is about 80%. That's what Manolo, was anybody else here? Manolo and I visited last year, probably a lovely day at the LRS sorting center. And that was the number they showed that they gave to us, that if it actually gets there, they are recycling 80% of it. But this is a company that's trying to get at the other 20%, that this sorting equipment just cannot, cannot deal with, and that creates tremendous problems for them. And, you know, just another thing to think about is that it's a dangerous job for somebody at these LRS sorting centers to go in and pull out a plastic bag which has gummed up a machine which has stopped operation for the day. So if nothing else will cause you to do this, you know, think about the people who, you know, put themselves in harm's way just because we're too lazy to sort out our trash. And that is the end of my rant.
I went to their website just now. And what's interesting is that they'll recycle things that are difficult to, I mean, they're hard to find a place to go, right? So household electronics, batteries, light bulbs.
Batteries we recycle right here in Village Hall.
I understand. Okay. But if I don't, I can put it in that bag and just.
No. So, okay. So let me point this out.
That's what they're saying. Ridwell.
No, you can put it in your box.
Yeah.
But the box and the bag is different. So
I understand.
Okay. But let me just say this to clarify. So the bags, the two things for the subscription that I have, the two things that you could put in are plastic film and multi-layer plastic. If we did get to the point where we could have a box, which I think my brother said he pays $15 a month for this box, then there's a lot more things. If you are part of this subscription program, there are add-in bags that you could buy that have other different costs. So you could expand it. But for this area, for now, this is relatively limited. But
participation yet is
they're close. I mean, when they came, I was in Oak Park. They had 1,000, and they were headed up to North County, which I think has a better. I think they. I would not be surprised if they're close. So, if you are considering this, another way to look at it is that you could be part of the group. You know, the venture recyclists who would actually bring this to our area, and people who, you know, maybe wouldn't have the incentive to do something like this would be able to just put it in a box. So
that we are at 8:30. I don't know if anyone else has any other business. Otherwise, our next meeting is scheduled for November 11th. That is Veterans Day. However, Village Hall is open that day. So unless there's any conflicts, I was still planning on having the meeting that evening. Again, if you are unavailable for any reason, let me know.
I may not be around, but I'll let you know.
Yep. And then other than that, we would need there's no other business. We would need a motion to adjourn.
I got something to add that I meant to say in my opening, and this kind of goes to what Susan was talking about. But Triton's working on a map project, which is essentially making mats for the homeless to sleep on, as well as pillows out of plastic bags, and you flatten them. And we're still in the phase of collecting them. So if you have them, if you want to bring them here. And I don't know, I would be willing to come to Village Hall if Village Hall wants to put out a bin and haul them to Triton, but that might be too much to ask.
Well, I have a suggestion for you. Fresh Time collects plastic bags. You might go to them and just say, can I take, I mean, I recently reached in and took a bunch and said, you know, I collect trash in the morning. Can I take them? They were like, and the bags they took, they had not been used. Like somebody had pulled them out and just thrown them in there. But you might be able to just take their whole thing, and that saves them the step of, and it's a higher purpose than that's supposed to be going into a Trex bench, but it's sort of a higher purpose to be using it right away.
And yeah. Manolo, I like that idea. And once we get our, you know, expansive native landscaping done and it's full of milkweed plants, one of the early uses of milkweed seeds, you may know this, was batting for pillows and blankets. I don't know if down the road we might be able to grow the batting for these kinds of materials.
And you did tell me that, David, and we're going to have a project at Little Bits where we stuff things with milkweed. So we're putting small scale, but like little pincushion, but small scale. We're starting
fairy,
to
do. Just, pillows. Yeah.
Just to give people the idea that this is something you could do.
Yeah.
All right, with that, do we have a motion to adjourn?
I motion to adjourn at 8:34.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Co-Chair Charette?
Yes, please.
Commissioner Cadleck?
Yes.
Commissioner Avalos?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoyt?
Yes.
Commissioner Marty?
Yes.
All right, we are adjourned at 8:34.